Hello, everyone. I'm Marty Glickman, speaking for Sports Champions and talking with one of the greatest ball players of all time, Mickey Mantle of the New York Yankees. Mickey, did your dad help you in your days as a younger ball player?
It's 3:38 at News Talk 1400 WRJN. Welcome to the afternoon news. Ted Ayland here. Great to have you along with us. That man's voice may not be familiar to you if you knew him as Marty Glickman. He is a very famous sportscaster, more often than not on the East Coast. Of all the people that would be around this area and even in this building, the one person probably know him best would be Don Rosen, our sound off host, because he grew up in the New York area. And Marty Glickman was all over New York when it came to being a very, very famous sportscaster. But he also has another piece of history, not necessarily of his choice, that has him living in infamy. In fact, that's basically the basis. His sportscasting and this incident that we're going to be talking about shortly, that our guest put together a documentary about this great sportscaster and this great athlete as well, Marty Glickman. The HBO documentary called Glickman, illuminating the life and legacy of the man who pioneered modern sports reporting. It debuts on August 26th, exclusively on HBO, and he joins us right now. Writer, producer, and director of the documentary Glickman, James L. Friedman, joins us. And Jim, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, sir.
Thanks for having me, Ted.
Like I said, a lot of people in the Midwest may not know the name Marty Glickman. I know him for a few different reasons. One of them is sometimes if you end up seeing old clips from the newsreels of Paramount News, they had sports features, and if you see at the bottom, voiced by Marty Glickman. And that, you know, of all the things, that may be the one thing that maybe some people know him for, but outside of that, he's pretty much an unknown quantity outside, really, of the New York area.
Yes, it's absolutely true. I used to work for Marty many years ago. When I was a senior in high school, I ended up fortuitously producing his late-night radio show on WNEW, which, mm-hmm. by the way, was a bit of a groundbreaking show. It was one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation. And years later, I moved to St. Louis and went to Washington University, and then went to Stanford Film School and moved down to Los Angeles. And you'd sit around and people say, what's the best job you ever had? And I would say, well, when I was 17, I used to work for Marty Glickman producing his radio show. And I would hear back, who's Marty Glickman?
Right.
And I couldn't believe it, because if you grew up in the Northeast in the New York area in the latter part of the 20th century and were any bit of a sports fan, Marty Glickman was part of the soundtrack of your life. So I realized, outside of New Yorkers who had moved to Wisconsin or other parts of the country, people didn't know Marty, and his story was so incredible. I wanted the public to really know about this great man, and it was a privilege doing the documentary, a total labor of love.
Yeah, because when you worked with him, he was pretty much already a sportscasting legend in the New York area.
Correct.
Because he did the Knicks games, he did Giants games along the way, and a lot of other different matters. And you're talking about his sports talk show, the one that you were his producer for, being groundbreaking. He was groundbreaking in many different ways when it comes to sports casting.
Yes, he was really the creative force behind the beginning of HBO Sports, and was mm-hmm. the first broadcaster on the air at HBO Sports. And just to give people an idea, just from his broadcasting before we go into other aspects,
sure.
Marty Glickman invented radio basketball play-by-play, not only terminology, and by that I mean phrases you hear on every broadcast today, the key, the lane, the midcourt stripe, and his most famous swish, mm-hmm. all Marty Glickman words. But what he really did, and Bob Costas and Larry King talk about it in the film, he gave you the geography of the court on radio.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to Marty Glickman, a basketball game would be, and there weren't very many being broadcast to begin with, they would sound like Smith passes to Elon to Friedman, Friedman shoots, it's good. You had no idea where anyone was.
Right.
Marty would say, Friedman dribbles up along the right sideline, throws a bounce pass to the top of the circle or the top of the key to Elon. Elon throws it into the left corner to Irving. Irving drives across the lane and banks in a one-handed shot. And he would differentiate. I have all the great sportscast, Mike Breen and Bob Costas, Marv Albert in the film talking about it. He would differentiate between driving down the lane and driving across the lane. And as Larry King so aptly said, he was television on radio.
Right. And you mentioned that you worked for Marty Glickman, and probably his most important and most prized protege would be the fact that one night Marty Glickman just wasn't able to do a Knicks game. And so basically his helper along the way sat in, Marv Albert. And the next thing you know, he'd been doing Knicks games as well as Rangers and Giants games for a number of years in New York City.
Marv told me that he felt Marty deliberately, he was in Europe, and he could have gotten back for a Knick game in Boston, and he felt he deliberately did not get back so Marv would have his first shot. And, you know, Marty denied that story when he was alive, but Marv absolutely believes it to be true.
Yeah, and the one thing is, Marty Glickman might have a wider presence in national broadcasting had the time been right. But at that time, they were looking for more Midwestern voices. His was more of a New Yorkish accent, more of a Jewish accent, really. And really, the first person to break through with that, obviously, Howard Cosell.
Correct.
And then from there, things broke through for a lot of other, you know, with an accent like a New York type accent.
Even today,
right.
You don't really hear regional, you don't hear a heavy Southern accent on a national broadcast.
True.
You don't hear heavy Italian or ethnic accents. Even today, that's not the case. Marv Albert's career, the first half of his career, was not national. And as
right.
you said, had Marty been born about 15 years later, people would know who he is.
That's true. But Marty Glickman also has another important role in history, and we mentioned it a little earlier on. It had to do with the Berlin Olympics of 1936. This was Hitler's Olympics, and he was a part of the U.S. Olympic team. Tell the story of what happened with Marty Glickman at that Olympic Games.
Absolutely. First thing you have to understand about Marty, people do not know that he was a world-class athlete in track and field and in football. And the reason they didn't know is because he never talked about it, unlike most sportscasters, mm-hmm. on his broadcast. He felt the game was the thing, not his own personal career. Well, going back into this film, and I found some incredible footage of him playing football at Syracuse and racing people. At one time, and before the Olympics in 36, Marty Glickman was the third fastest runner in the world behind Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf. And he was supposed to, he was on the U.S. relay team, and along with Sam Stoller, the only other Jewish runner on the team. And these were the Nazi Olympics where Hitler's Aryan race theory was being shredded by the dominance of the U.S. black athletes, winning gold medal after gold medal in the main events of the Olympics, the track and field. And the day of the race, Marty was supposed to run. He was told by the Olympic track coaches, and many people believe with heavy influence from the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee, Avery Brundage, who it turned out was proven to be a Nazi sympathizer, that he would not get a chance to run and he was going to be replaced, him and Sam Stoller. And everyone said, you know, it was a foregone conclusion the U.S. was going to win the 400 relay by 15 yards, and they ended up winning by 15 yards. And people believe that they were not allowed to run because Hitler did not want to see two Jews on the victory podium because it would hurt his stance of Jewish inferiority that he was trying to sell with German people.
Right. So, we're talking about the only incident of anti-Semitism in the Olympics, and Hitler had nothing to do with it. It had to do with the Americans, Avery Brundage.
You can't say he had nothing to do with it because people feel he was trying to appease
mm-hmm.
Adolf Hitler.
Okay,
and
indirectly.
2 years after the Olympics, when the Nazis were building the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded the construction contract to Avery Brundage's company.
Really? Okay, I was
not
aware of that.
It was not just the political situation, but the point is that it was clear Glickman would have, and Stoller, they would have won. And in fact, the truth is, 2 weeks after the Olympics, Marty ran with Owens and Metcalf in a relay in England and set a world record.
Wow. That's incredible when you hear that sort of information about that. And years later, Marty Glickman did get a plaque. Obviously, there was quite a bit of guilt from the probably the International Olympic Committee about it, that he didn't get that opportunity to compete for a gold medal. They gave him a plaque in commemoration of that. But obviously, there's no way to replicate. You know, there's no way to be able to patch that up, because he had the opportunity to go for the gold medal, be the best in the world, and that was taken away from him.
Yes, and in fact, you know, what I set out to do when I made this film, I quickly saw the threat of this film is what happens when an 18-year-old's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice. Do they become bitter? Do they triumph in life, as Marty ultimately did? I mean, he happened to be Jewish, but the story's universal. And, you know, I really believe he in fact, thought Sam Stoller, who was told he wasn't going to run on his 21st birthday, happy birthday,
right,
never fully recovered from that. And Marty didn't really talk about this unless every 4 years he was asked when the Olympics were going on.
Right.
And he himself returned to Berlin Stadium 50 years later to memorialize Jesse Owens' accomplishments. And all this anger came out of Marty that he didn't know he had been bottling up inside of him for 50 years, that how bitter he was about them doing that to not just him, but any 18-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm. Glickman, that's going to be debuting the documentary on Marty Glickman Monday, August 26th, exclusively on HBO, and it's going to be running all the way through early September. And,
correct.
And and we're talking right now with the writer, producer, and director of that project, James L. Friedman. And by the way, speaking of Marty, another very famous Marty, obviously a big fan of Marty Glickman, helped you out because he's one of the executive producers, Martin Scorsese.
He actually was not a big fan of Marty Glickman, other than he knew him from the Paramount newsreel.
Oh, really?
My film played at the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, a big Hollywood agency, asked to see the film, and I was in his office a week later, and he said, you know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese. You know, a typical Tuesday in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, I got an email from Marty Scorsese saying, I love the film. I'd like to have it on HBO through my company. You know, and who was I to say no?
Yeah, well, when you obviously that's an email you're going to save and preserve for life, because you can't get a higher thumbs up from one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, Martin Scorsese.
Couldn't agree more. A couple other things just for the audience.
Sure.
If you don't know Marty Glickman, you will know people in the film. In addition to Marv Albert and Bob Costas, there's Bill Bradley, Jim Brown, Frank Gifford, Elliot Gould, Larry King, Oscar Robertson, David Stern, Jerry Stiller. A lot of celebrities in the film that you will know. And also, if you want to follow along on my Twitter, Glickman the Film, and my website is Glickman the Film, and you'll find all sorts of fun pictures and interesting stories about Marty.
Well, I'm going to look forward to getting to the website and checking that out, and hopefully along the way seeing what the special looks like, the entire documentary on Glickman. Jim Friedman, thanks for joining us on the program. We appreciate it, and plenty of success and luck with the Glickman documentary, sir.
Thank you so much, Ted. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. 351 at WRJN.